Welcome to the Baseball America Podcast. Baseball America, bringing you baseball news you can't get anywhere else for more than 35 years. Now it's time to talk baseball.
Hey, if it's a day, and it's October, it's time for a Baseball America Playoff Podcast. John and JJ, I got to tell you, JJ, I'm having a lot of fun with these.
I am too. I know.
Taking our conversations on actually and sharing them with people is a good thing. I like to share.
It is one of those things where this is literally what we do every morning.
Pretty much.
I mean, we get in a little earlier than most everyone else in the office. We drop kids off at school. And the idea from this really stemmed from, if we're going to be doing this 15 minutes anyway, we might as well record it and let everyone else hear it too.
Correct.
With literally less yelling, I think. I think it does moderate us a little bit.
It does.
We have had moments in the office where we've had to explain to other people, like, no, John and I are good. We're not, like, angry at each other. We just like yelling at each other.
It reigns in my passion. And truth be told, I like yelling more. And I'm very fortunate over all this time to be friends with JJ and that he accepts my yelling. And he knows me, and I get away with stuff that I wouldn't get away with average people. So I'm very fortunate. And we won't yell today because we've got company, too. We might have a special guest.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you hear a little girl, Maymay, my youngest is sick today. So she's over there playing iPad as we do this.
We'll see what happens. We had a game two of the World Series, 5-1 Cubs victory. Few things stood out to us. I guess our bullet points off the top of the... If I were Bill O'Reilly and going over my talking points memo this morning, my talking points would be Trevor Bauer, Kyle Schwarber, pace of play.
And the funny thing is that Jake Arrieta's not in there, and Jake Arrieta had a no-hitter for as long as anyone's carried a no-hitter for, like, what? In a World Series game for, like, what, 30-something years?
It was a long...
Years?
He kept it for a long time. And, I mean, he's a threat every time, and he was just so erratic last night. It was really strange. It was a strange no-hitter. He didn't feel like he was dominating the Indians.
It was not dominating like Corey Kluber was the night before. Kluber the night before, you're like, wow, this could be... Like, you knew he probably was... The pitch count was going to keep him from doing it, but Corey Kluber on game one... In the first, second, and third, it was like we might be watching Bob Gibson in 68.
Right. You could have seen if in a different scenario where if they were healthier and you didn't know that Terry Francona was already planning to start him again in game four and came out yesterday and admitted he's starting him in game four. But you could have seen a scenario where he goes 9 innings, throws a complete game shutout, and you know maybe gives up 4 hits, a walk, and 16 strikeouts. I mean, that was doable.
Right. I mean, it was something. If that had been Game 7, it would have been one of those things where it's like, this goes down as a Pantheon game.
It was on its way. It was a Pantheon start. And then then you have the other end of Corey Kluber, which was Trevor Bauer last night. And, JJ, we've followed Bauer for a long time. This is high school junior year at Hart when he was teammates with Mike Montgomery. He graduated a year early, went to UCLA, was our college player of the year. I live tweeted his pregame routine of the College World Series in 2010 and did a big column on it afterwards, and the long tossing, the javelin, all the goofy stuff we've written about. We've talked with Kyle Boddy here in our office about what he's done with Driveline. So Trevor Bauer's eccentricities, the drone, all the stuff is all part of the Trevor Bauer package. But ultimately what we saw last night to me, JJ, is a guy who does not have the ability to make adjustments when he's needed to in this postseason. He hasn't gone 5 innings in a start yet in the postseason. And he doesn't have the fastball command you need to go through a lineup 2 or 3 times, a great lineup, when it matters. I mean, he has become the essence of a fringe starter. He's the number 3 overall pick in the draft, and he's not lived up to it.
But I was going to say, he's the essence of a back-end starter.
That's what he is.
I was going to say, I don't think he's fringe, because I don't think there's ever... I think Trevor Bauer has been good enough that, to me, like, he's not one of those we're talking about a number 5/6. And I love I love the number 6 starter idea. The guy who's... You really, if he's in your rotation, it's because he's filling in for someone and you hope he's not there longer. That's not Trevor Bauer. I do think, though, when you take all the... You can call it eccentricities, whatever it is. I'll frame it a different way. And maybe this is... I'm kind of interested. I've saved this to see. I want to hear what you think about this. Could it be that Trevor Bauer, all this, has gotten him to where he is, but the reality of it is that he's just a limited athlete, limited physically. And that's actually allowed him to get to there. And framed in a different way, I mean, maybe I'm putting too much of a rose-colored glow, you know, hue on it, but is this a guy? I know he went 3rd overall, amazing career at UCLA, but even when he was there, it was something where Gerrit Cole was the guy who physically was everything that you wanted a front of the rotation starter to be.
He might just be the is your question that basically is Trevor Bauer at the limit of what he can be already?
Has Trevor? What I'm saying is Trevor Bauer gotten to here because Trevor Bauer, for all whatever you may think about, you know, all these things he does, you know, person who's listening to this, no one works harder at trying to be a pitcher. Trevor Bauer, I know the drones, everything. Trevor Bauer wants to understand pitching to a level beyond that of almost any other pitcher. And again, maybe that gets in his way at times. Maybe it doesn't. But I do think when you talk about what Trevor Bauer's problems are now, and you look at what Trevor Bauer's problems were when he broke into the majors, they're much of the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what it really comes back to is Trevor Bauer doesn't have the fastball command to be a dominant pitcher. And maybe it clicks for him at age 30. But at the same time, Trevor Bauer has had off seasons where you said, where he said, my entire focus is going to be on trying to develop improved command.
Right.
And this is not a guy who says that and then takes 4 months off and then a week before spring training starts throwing again.
Yeah, he's working like crazy on it. That is the number one thing I respect about Trevor Bauer, is that he is never satisfied. And you know, like you said, that there's probably not anybody outworking him, or at least, and definitely not anybody outthinking him.
And the thing with that is that this is not something where he's in denial that that's the problem.
Right.
He's said it himself.
And he improved it this year. His walk rate went from 4.0 last year to 3.3 this year, and that improvement...
But that's still below average.
It's still below average for a starter, but it did help him. I mean, he performed better in 2016 than he had in 2015. So there was discernible improvement, and he might be at the ceiling of what his fastball command improvement could be.
But when you watch him last night, when you compare him to these other guys we're seeing, and again, Trevor Bauer, if this all breaks right for the Indians and they're healthy, Trevor Bauer is in the almost where the he's in the number four starter role where
he started the year in the bullpen.
He may not make a start in the World Series if everyone's healthy for the Indians.
I agree. He would be the fourth starter.
Because if Kluber
best.
Goes if Kluber goes 1-4-7, Trevor Bauer would have been working out of the pen.
I mean, and if it were Kluber, Carrasco, Salazar, he would be competing with Tomlin for that fourth spot to whether or not to get a start. And I don't think it's a guarantee, even though he has better stuff than Tomlin, that he's a better pitcher than Tomlin.
But when you watch him last night, Trevor Bauer in most starts does not have a pitch that he can just say, okay, we see it with Arrieta. We really saw it with Kluber. When you talk about frontline starters, one of the things they have is that they have this plus, usually it's a 70 pitch.
I think of it like an offense in football that when they get sideways or the off schedule, they have a couple of plays that they know if we execute this, we're going to get what we want. And these are the plays that we know 9 times out of 10 we will execute. And pitchers are the same way. I had this, you know, for the Braves for 15 years, it was, all right, let's get back on schedule, throw the fastball low and away and locate it for a strike. And a pitcher can execute that. And you said it, like Kluber had two the other
Kluber,
day.
Yeah, Kluber.
He had the two-seamer, he located at will, and he had the slide piece. Bauer doesn't seem like he has even one pitch that he has that level of confidence in that he can locate at will.
And he doesn't have a pitch that really grades as that plus-plus. I mean, does he have really a... On most outings, I don't know truly has a plus pitch.
He's got a really good breaking ball. He really can spin a breaking ball. I'm not sure, you know, that there's one that's consistently plus, but it's close.
Right.
The thing is,
it's on the border.
So to me, Bauer really is, I think you make a great point. This might just be who he always is, and the improvement will be incremental. He's never going to have the athleticism and that kind of arm to be able to locate an above-average fastball consistently. I think you might be right about that. And that's does he have to be, like we talked with Matt Eddy yesterday off the air, in this era that is we seem to be approaching where it's just going to be a five-inning starter, does he just need to throw even more off-speed stuff and pitch less, quote-unquote, American? You know, like when I was talking to a pitching coordinator recently about an international pitcher, and he said, well, we just got him in. We had to get him to pitch more American and use his fastball more. I almost feel like Trevor Bauer needs to pitch more Asian and pitch less off his fastball. Like you see Tanaka or you see Kenta Maeda, where their usage rate of their fastballs in the 30 to 40% range. I almost feel like Trevor Bauer needs to go that route, JJ.
Kenta Maeda and him are, you know, they do things sometimes somewhat, I mean, different ways, but there's some similarities there, right? In what you see, how they're approaching it, and how they're not going to get through, they're not going to give you 6-7 in these starts. But again, I do wonder sometimes if Trevor Bauer, in no way want to say victim of his own success, but the fact that he was the number three pick in the draft, does that mean that he is viewed as in many ways as a disappointment? Where if he'd have been a fifth round pick who had dominated, dominated at Stetson,
right?
Where we would be talking about,
good call,
how we would be talking about this guy gets every bit out of his ability, and he's limited, but you know what? I give him credit because he shouldn't be where he is.
I think you make a great point. It really is all about how you frame it. And if you view it through the lens of he was college player of the year and third overall pick in the draft, from that standpoint, he is a disappointment. Hey, he's better than the guy drafted a spot ahead of him. Rest in peace, career of Danny Holtzen. He's been way better than Danny Holtzen. But that 2011 draft for pitchers, Cole, Holtzen, Bauer, Archie Bradley, Dylan Bundy, and the best pitcher of all of them, Jose Fernandez.
Truly resting.
Going to really choke up thinking about it. But that is Trevor Bauer, really, it really is how you look at it. And the fact that he's making starts for a World Series team was a key part. He was an important part of a World Series team.
But
it is to his credit, and I'm being too harsh on him.
But at the same time,
last night he was very maddening.
But the thing that is difficult, though, is if you're the Indians, you are not hoping that he is it. I'm not saying it's not within the range of all possibilities for him, but you are not hoping that he's going to give you six where at the end of six it's no runs on the board. You are hoping that he's going to give you five and leave. I don't feel like that his outing last night was outside of the realm of what they were expecting out of him.
I think you're probably right about that.
That's where I think that Cleveland, and we talked about it a little bit on the podcast yesterday, where they are in some sort of trouble is that I don't know that there's any starts that are not made by Corey Kluber in this, where that's not we got to the fifth, we got to the sixth, and we've only given up a run or two. We're in great shape. This is
ultimately for the Indians to win the World Series, because they're not the better team on paper, right on the field, in my mind. They can still win the World Series. It's a best of five now, and we're tied at one. They no longer have the home field advantage, A. B, they're going to have to hit, JJ. They did not hit in the ALCS. They didn't hit great in the division series. They won with good starting pitching and fantastic bullpen.
But when you look at this lineup, and when you look at this lineup, I mean, it's not a bad lineup, but when you compare it to the Cubs lineup, it's hard to see how you expect them to hit more than the Cubs when the Cubs really do.
Right.
When you get to the middle of that lineup and it's it's Bryant, and it's Rizzo, and it's Zobrist, who puts together professional at-bat after professional at-bat.
Such a good hitter. But then now you have the way Joe Maddon calls it, the thickening, really. And there's no one who thickens a lineup like Kyle Schwarber. And
again, we're two games in. Anyone who felt like, wow, this is a terrible idea, he's not going to be able to do this, it's okay, you were wrong, that's fine.
That's right.
Again, if he does nothing else in the series. Now, I know
who looks more hitterish in the batter's box than Kyle.
He's had more good takes.
Mm-hmm.
Rizzo's had more good foul balls. Rizzo is Mr. You got two strikes. And that bat was a walk last night, wasn't it? Like the fifth or sixth where it was foul, 12 pitches or whatever.
Yeah. He's both of those guys have had great at bats. Rizzo's have been more of the foul ball variety, he was getting pounded inside by Bauer and still getting the bat hit. Even the double he hit the right field, which small part of the game yesterday. Lonnie Chisenhall had a really bad day defensively.
Had two. He's just not a great right fielder.
He misplayed the triple in right field. And the thing is, the defensive metrics say that he's good. But he misplayed the ball in right field into a triple and threw to the wrong base, kind of Joey Bat style in the first inning. And there could have been a play at the plate on Brian, I thought, if he'd thrown to the cutoff man. But
by the way, and again, when you talk about big guys, Chris Bryant cutting that bag at third base in the first inning.
That he did very well.
That is an athletic player, 6'5" player. That is not a stiff guy trying to rumble around the bases.
No, it was he's really good. And that was a element of the game that the Cubs did extremely well. One of the things I'm trying to find, I thought I liked the tweet, but it was, I guess I didn't. What was it, 22 foul balls, I believe, yesterday that the Cubs had with two strikes? That's one of the reasons the game lasted so long. But the other part of it is their offensive approach has been better than the Indians' approach.
Trevor Bauer basically was averaging over 20 pitches an inning. I mean, well over 20. I mean, he didn't make it through four.
So part of it's Bauer.
And he gave up.
Bauer's high volume of pitches, an inefficient guy.
And he was against a lineup that was going to make that happen. And the thing about it is this is smart on the Cubs' part, is that what you saw last night, that's what you want to do. I mean, that's going to be a key for the Cubs.
Yeah.
The Indians' bullpen is not a six-headed monster where you say, you know, really we want to get on the starter, but we don't want him out of the game.
Right.
It is. I mean, again, it's nothing against the Manships and McAllisters of the world, but they're not guys that you say, oh, these next two innings, we're just out of it.
Right.
They're not. Andrew Miller, you are. Yeah. But, you know, but again,
you want to get to Jeff Manship and Danny Otero, and if they beat you, you tip your cap. I mean, the Cubs lineup with Schwarber in it really does make a huge difference. To me, the Indians lineup, you know, they haven't really gotten Santana going. They haven't really gotten Kipnis going, although he did get his first hit.
Wonder of him, how much is that ankle really?
Yeah, I think it is, especially in the cold. The cold is going to really...
He had an error, which, I don't know if the ankle had anything to do with it. It was more like his hands, but...
DMing with a scout, though, who just thought that it was his footwork on that play, and just said, like, in that cold, your sprained ankle's got to be barking at you like that. And that he thought it affected him, and I thought it was interesting to have the scout note that. But basically...
Francisco Lindor, he's been doing it.
Yeah, but they couldn't get anybody on base, though, last night to try to take advantage of Arrieta's slow times of the plate and his that you can run on Arrieta the way they had the night before they got on John Lester. So, you know, again, I think a lot of it comes down to I'm always been curious. We haven't discussed this, I don't think, on a podcast. I'm always curious by them leading Santana off. I know he walks a ton. I know it's worked for them. But for me, you just flip Lindor and Santana, and it's just such a simple flip. And it makes, to me, so much more sense to have the guy who runs better and gets on base at a high clip. He's cramping up. He can't run. And the night before, the ball got away. That first and second, right after Santana came up with a cramp, Lindor's behind him. Ball gets away. Lindor's halfway to second base and then has to go back because Santana's not even in his mindset. I thought that was a play where the obsession with the on base and not having the faster guy as your lead runner actually hurt him. It didn't end up biting him in that game. They won that game, but...
But it is something worth
noting. For me, Lindor getting more bats and putting Santana in more of a power position just makes more sense. I think it's a better use of their lineup.
And then you would have Carlos Santana and Chris Bryant as your two hole hitters in this.
You could have Kipnis second. You would go Lindor, Kipnis, Santana, and then you're still having that. The Lindor, Kipnis, Santana is a switch hitter. Napoli, doesn't Ramirez switch hit? You know, they're hard to match up with, and it doesn't really seem to matter because bullpen. You know, it's not like they have a lefty matchup guy. Their lefty matchup guy is Mike Montgomery, who went, 2+ last night, 2 1/3? JJ, one of your favorite stories you've ever written was Mike Montgomery with the Wilmington.
It's waxed and waned. There's times where that's been the story. I'm like, that one I don't want over, you know.
Yeah.
But
he was good last night.
I'm happy to see it. Obviously. I mean, it's something where it's funny, like talking to him. Was it last year or 2 years ago when he was in Durham?
Durham, 2 years ago.
And it was like, you know. And we were talking, and it's like we almost like I was asking him about like the back, you know, story, you know, like and all. And it was almost like we just had at one point it was almost like a nod, like, yep, we don't have to go to everything that you know, it's gone through the years and all. But it is fun to see him now. It's not exactly where, you know, but he is an important guy on that team. And I do think
a trusted guy,
but you know, a great pickup for them because I think I did tweet at the time, like, look, this is a pickup that is more important than people probably realize.
And also, like, Dan Vogelbach, hey, he might be a player for the Mariners. He might be a solid average regular, might be a second division regular.
But Dan Vogelbach had no hope ever playing for the Cubs. Dan Vogelbach would have been the fourth best option. They would have had, if they had three injuries at first base, then maybe he'd have played for Chicago in 2017.
Right. Hey, but if they had two, he'd be a better hitter right now than say Chris Coughlin or Jorge Soler. Certainly right, looks
but,
lost.
But well, that was an interesting thing they talked about last night in the game. It was like, you know, okay, now we're going to Chicago, and I know that they're talking about Schwarber and, you know, the defense, and he's just back, and but you know they really could use him in left field.
What would you do? Would you? Put
I don't him think
in left
you
field?
Can. I don't think he's been. I don't think there's been any part of this prepping him for the World Series. We've heard all about, and I do think that people don't understand, you know, how much easier it is to prep a hitter to get ready now than it would have been 20 years ago.
Correct. That was actually another Kyle Boddy tweet last night. You wrote about it in the issue that
you got
has
a hack
Kyle,
attack. You can.
It's the issue that has Kyle Schwarber on the cover. I tweeted the picture yesterday. Men at work, Kyle Schwarber in catcher's gear. That's like a frozen piece that you'll never see again. But Kyle Schwarber and your whole story is about developing catchers, the hack attack, and these other related machines. These three-wheel pitching machines that are
you can dial
a
up.
Huge improvement on old pitching machines.
Now, again, I don't think it gets you 100% of there because, and it's funny, in our office we were talking about this. Larry, one of our ad guys, plays senior adult baseball, and he's hit off a hack attack, and he talks about how the one thing he doesn't like about it is that it is, timing-wise, it's difficult because we're trying to read. I mean, it's a little different than reading the ball coming out of the hand.
Right.
But you can see legit big league sliders, legit big league. I mean, name a pitch, you can see it there.
I know. I saw it in a couple of stories. The one I remember was Jeff Passan's column. So that in October, Schwarber was staring at 1,300 breaking mm-hmm. pitches thrown off a machine to retrain his eyes. And you saw it when he spit on that slider that Andrew Miller threw him. That's like, okay, this is an 80 slider. And he read it. It wasn't just because of the pitching machine, but it had to help.
But what we've not heard from anyone, and when you talk about his knee,
yeah,
I have not even heard anyone say he is cleared to hit. He's cleared to run the bases.
Right.
We have not heard anything of he took 1,000 fly balls to
exactly.
prep in left field. And the thing about it is that when you talk about a knee that hopefully is 100%, but let's say it's 95%
yeah.
at this point, there is a difference. In the batter's box, it's just swinging.
Right.
There's no rapid cuts there. This is not the same as asking him to guard a point guard.
I mean, he puts a lot of torque on his. In that swing, and he puts a lot of weight on that back leg. But that's what the brace is there for. Moving side to side, covering ground in left field is way more to ask
and
for.
There's
than
way more to ask for. And let's start with the fact that let's be honest here again. Kyle Schwarber is not a good left fielder.
Right. When healthy.
Yet when healthy.
And Kyle Hendricks is a pitch to contact guy who started Game 3 against Josh Tomlin in the Battle of the 1990s style pitchers where we will not see, there won't be any fastballs that hit 95 and have the flame.
But,
you know,
which, by the way, thinking of this, I you know, and maybe I just didn't notice it last night. We'll talk about pace of play. I dozed a little bit in the last innings
that
got
right.
last night. But we saw the fastest pitch. Earl Chapman came in the game, which does mean we have now seen, last night was the fastest pitch in World Series history.
Right.
102.5, I believe, was his max last night.
Yeah, no, he was, he had flame emojis were in effect for Aroldis Chapman. But yeah, I'll be shocked if the Cubs do play him in left field. I think they're going to want to. I think you could see him in left field in game 4 because Lackey is a little bit more of a swing and miss guy. I think some of it will depend on how warm it is and the weather and all that kind of thing.
But again, I don't even know what no one has even said is he actually even cleared to do that?
I think he probably is. If he's cleared to hit and run, I think he's probably cleared to play. As long as I think they would just tell him, you're going to play as deep as you can. You're not going to go back on any balls. You're only going to come forward. And the thing is, like Dexter Fowler, he has good range in center field, but this isn't Mike Trout. This isn't Starling Marte. This is not Gorkys Hernandez. You know, I think the one thing that you'd be, besides winning the game last night, the other thing you'd be most excited about as a Cub fan is that Jason Hayward had a good swing last night. I think the Cubs.
It's like,
he
that
hit
may
all
have been
hard.
The first one. That may have been the first one in a month.
It was one of the hardest balls he's hit all postseason, and I think that might be the kind of thing where Joe Maddon seizes on and says, "Hey, we're going to sit Kyle Schwarber in this game for our 8-year, $200 million, whatever career contract he got, guy." And that guy had a good swing. He's a good defensive player. We're going to start him, and that's the way they're going to go. But they will deploy Schwarber I think that's the thing. You can still deploy him as a pinch hitter at the right spot. And there's no one in that lineup, save for maybe Rizzo or Bryant, that you don't pinch hit him for, where he's not an improvement at any point in the game, even as good as Zobrist has been. Maybe that's the only other guy you wouldn't take out because of the defensive versatility that he also brings and the flexibility he brings your lineup.
Right now, Javi Baez has been so locked in, and
he's just okay so far in the World Series. I mean, he's been good. He was not as locked in as he was in the first two series.
But I do think also defensively with Baez,
yes,
like,
incredible asset.
I was going to say, if you pinch hit for him and you say, I mean, you could put Zobrist there, but you are losing something there of some significance. But again, it is something where if you have Schwarber on your bench, it is something where it also may force you, if you're the Indians, to keep Andrew Miller in there even longer.
Yeah.
Because if you finish the eighth inning and Andrew Miller is at two innings, and you go to the ninth,
and Schwarber hasn't been used yet,
and it's a one-run game, let's say, that's in the back of, if I'm Francona, that's in the back of my mind. It's like, Andrew Miller needs to be the guy facing Schwarber. I do not want Cody Allen,
no question,
to be the guy facing Schwarber. So that, I mean, that being just kind of sitting in Joe Maddon's back pocket, now again, I don't know if it's necessarily a good thing to say, hey, I'm forcing them to use Andrew Miller more.
Right.
But it does, the Indians have to be somewhat reactive to that because Kyle Schwarber can change it that way.
I agree. It's going to be fascinating to watch. We don't have a game tonight to break down, so our podcast tomorrow morning may just be either a look ahead or maybe the Matt Blood 18U podcast.
I was
going
to say, we have one in our back pocket that we need to...
But let's wrap this one up, JJ, with some pace of play talk, because last night was not a lot of action, especially in the late innings.
Well, especially
pitcher visits. The game wasn't 100% out of reach, but it felt that way. The Cubs left a lot of runners on base and still had only a four-run lead. But that was a 4-plus-hour game. MLB moved the game up an hour to avoid the rain.
Thankfully.
Thank goodness they did that. That definitely worked out. So I just tweeted, I'm open to suggestions for speeding pace of play for tomorrow's podcast. Email us or give us a holler on Twitter. The only email I got at podcast@baseballamerica.com came from Kristen Johnson. But I do want to thank Kristen for tweeting, for emailing. As a Tribe fan, I think the Cinderella outfield has struck midnight. Your thoughts? I think that's very possible. But Lyons and Hall has not looked good in this series. I would, you know, and
Tyler Naquin has been.
Yeah, he hasn't been a factor. Coco Crisp, Rajai Davis. This is the Achilles heel.
Rajai Davis in center field, which was something we talked about in Matt A's suggestion, and you hoped that he would do something on the base pass, but the reality is he had a pretty horrible angle on a ball that turned a potential single into a double.
I agree. And you definitely wish that. Again, you want the thickening of the Cubs lineup with Schwarber. How much better would the Indians lineup look with Michael Brantley? I mean,
right.
He was their best player in 2015 when he was at full strength. Was it 2014?
2014, really, is when. That's the thing, it's been 2 years now since we've seen.
So you definitely wish that he were at full strength and you'd have a different look to this Indians lineup, but it is what it is. So that was my tweet. And here are some of the responses we had. Widow of Your Dreams at Leo Kitty. Destroy all managers. So that's not a serious reply. Nikki Coos Cruz wrote, how about don't speed pace of play? I'm sorry, Kevin. I love baseball, but I don't think that's an option. I just tell you.
Is there anyone watching that last night that says this is superior because it took 4 hours?
That's what I just don't understand.
We are baseball. We're not baseball fans. We are baseball fanatics.
Correct.
And
we're at the extreme. We're in the 99th percentile of baseball fans.
And, I mean, we watch a ton of baseball. We love baseball. But last night, the reality is, as a baseball fanatic, I want a lot of people to enjoy baseball.
Exactly.
I don't want to keep it as I don't want it to be a small club. Great thing is it's not a small club. There's a lot of people who love baseball. But last night, the later innings of last night's game was not a compelling product.
It was not.
And it was visits to the mound. It was, thankfully we didn't have Pedro Baez in there, but it was long stretches between pitches. And again, it is different if this is a one-run game. Yeah. It was a five-run game.
Yeah.
And we also had, the pitching changes where it's like you come back from commercial, the guy faces one batter, okay, and then you're going, we got a pitching change and we're back to commercial. And then
that's definitely
a pitching change and it's back to commercial.
That's definitely one of the suggestions that kept coming up. Matt Trueblood of Baseball Perspectives tweeted out, be fewer commercials, no conversation worth having. if MLB won't do that simple one simple thing.
And that is something.
Joseph also tweeted that to me, at JT Dutch. They're not going to scale it back to what it used to be. The main issue is ad time. Any other solution sounds gimmicky.
And there, that is something where I completely agree that MLB, when they talk about pace of play, what they never want to talk about is one of the biggest problems is ad load.
I don't disagree in any way on that one. Jerry Cush also wrote the same thing. Teague_Dougland on Twitter. Fewer commercials. That's all there needs to be. No mid-inning cutaways. Strict clocks between innings. And there was also one other really good one that I want to make sure I find. I'm sorry that I'm having to search for it on Twitter. It was at Play in School. Commercial-free like the World Cup. Joe Buck can read words from our sponsors in between innings. I think that actually could work.
Let me ask you that.
Or does she have ads everywhere? I would honestly trade ads on uniforms.
I would exactly
for better pace of play.
Let me ask you. Yeah, like I watch. World Cup soccer, Formula One, things like this, where the action doesn't stop.
Right.
And so what you have is that you have these moments where you have ads kind of wrapped around the action, or you have. Okay, we're having an ad over here, but at the same time, you can still see what's going on.
We have the technology to do it.
Anything like that, when you have an in-inning pitching change and you go to commercial, this is this break. When we talk about the tension of the game, well, let me tell you, when you go to a commercial break at that point, you take some of that tension away. If we think of baseball as a drama, the going to the commercial break is the hey, we got this cliffhanger that, in a drama where you send it to the next act and you can't wait to get back. No, when we get back, he's going to be standing on the mound.
I'm totally with you on that one. Craig Albernaz, former pro player, longtime AAA catcher, now coaching in the Tiger system, I believe. He tweeted at me, only two timeouts an inning, mound visit, catcher's visit, hitter asking for time, pitching change, etc. I'm totally down with some kind of regulation on timeouts.
And the thing about
when there's no one on second base, the catcher should not be able to visit the pitcher. And I'll go a step further again on the technology. I want the catcher to have an earpiece. I want the manager or the pitching coach, someone's designated with an earpiece. And I want the pitcher to have an earpiece. And I want them to be able to talk to each other. And we don't have these timeouts. I'm 100% serious about that. If you could do it in football where the crowd's louder and it's more intense like that, you could do it in baseball. And I think that MLB should seriously look into that so the catcher and pitcher can communicate.
Sponsored by Motorola or sponsored by Apple, whatever.
So freaking lootly.
Again.
That speeds the game and it's a moneymaker. A lot of ideas.
MLB makes money on instant replay. I mean, they've sponsored instant replay.
Where would you rather see them spend the money on? The replay system that doesn't work or on speeding the game up with that kind of technology? That's a no-brainer for me. I can't stand instant replay. That's a whole other subject. Love for the glove at Sherwood Allen said 5-run mercy rule after 6 if you have an elite bullpen. Absolutely not.
No.
Uper_Iowa, 2 warm-up pitches for relievers on the mound during a change, and he also wants smaller strike zone to encourage more balls and fewer strikes. I don't know if I agree with that one.
But I do the 2 pitches?
Yeah, fewer warm-up pitches. A lot of people are for that. I'm not because I think you want those 8 pitches to get used to the mound on the field. That's different from the mound of the bullpen. But, hey, if everybody was like Brandon Inge, 1998, comes in from shortstop, throws 2 pitches, I'm good. I would be happier.
I would say, you always throw Brandon Inge, and I always have Chris Carpenter from the St. Louis Cardinals, old St. Louis Cardinals,
right.
Chris Carpenter, Georgia Bulldog.
Yeah.
Chris Carpenter, but he would do 2 pitches in the pen, and then the 8 on the mound would give him ready.
That's right. Daryl Bonner, LLC, at UU Blog tweeted, I usually hate pace of play rules too, but God, tonight's game took forever. 5-1 shouldn't take 4 hours. That's basically our point. You know, is that it wasn't unwatchable, but it didn't make it good.
Again, we understand if there's a crazy 15-14 game that it's going to take a long time. That was a 5-1 game.
That's right.
Where we had a no-hitter on one end.
What was the score of that Phillies-Blue Jays game, 16-13 that year? I mean, like, that game was an abomination of baseball, but it should take a long time.
But okay, you say this is a unique circumstance. That was That was not a unique circumstance. I mean, that was just long.
Yeah, Doug Scalise, a longtime tweeter to me, at DVS Brewster, he wrote, limit mound visits by catcher per inning, Reduce ad time after each half inning would save at least 20 minutes and will never happen. I definitely agree that with all yeah, these guys, we need to reduce the
But the thing about it is what you will not hear is Rob Manfred saying, yes, pace of play is a problem, and we'll be honest with you. We are the problem. We're not changing it, so we're trying to mess around the corners. Because when you talk about, wow, this game was 2 hours, like when they talk about, you know, these old World Series games, they only took 2 hours. Well, yes.
Right.
The ad load between was basically, if you're ready to go, you go.
Exactly.
And now it's like...
The ad load in between innings was, hey, the first baseman, it took longer between innings because the first baseman on the other, on the Boston Braves didn't leave me his glove for me to share.
I had to find it. The grass is a little tall, so I had
and
to.
And also, we got to hurry this up because if we don't hurry up, the sun's going to go down and we won't be able to see the stinking ball.
Yes.
So different problems. We have more money now. We have more problems in the Baseball World Series. So good stuff. Appreciate everyone getting back to me on Twitter. Again, if you have thoughts on these podcasts, review us on iTunes. Email us podcast@baseballamerica.com. And like we said earlier, we've got a podcast reviewing the 18U national team.
Probably is. We'll save that for tomorrow.
Probably just go ahead and save it for tomorrow because
we don't have a game to mull over.
And we also have almanac work to do and prospect handbook work to do. So, JJ, thanks for making the time this morning. Thank you for making the time every morning, listeners, and downloading us at baseballamerica.com or at iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. For JJ,
I'm a podcast addict guy, so I'll give a podcast addict shout out. If you're an Android guy and you need something to really keep track of your podcast, Podcast Addict, I don't get paid for that. It's just it's a product I enjoy.
Hey, Podcast Addict, you can email us to sponsor the podcast at podcast@baseballamerica.com. So for JJ, I'm John. See you next time on the next Baseball America podcast. So long, everybody.
This concludes our program. Want more in-depth baseball coverage? Be a better fan. Visit baseballamerica.com to get more comprehensive baseball coverage.